Chapter 14 of Revelation. Listening time is approximately 17 minutes. Chapter 14, it's not verses 1 through 5. What do we know about 14? We're flashing where? Now we're going back to the end of the tribulation, verses 1 through 5.
And I looked, and there was the Lamb standing on Mount Zion. With him were 144,000 people, and had his name and his father's name written on their foreheads. And I heard a voice from heaven that sounded like a roaring water, like a loud peal of thunder. It sounded like the music made by musicians playing their harps. Mankind, they are the only ones who have been redeemed. They are the men who have kept themselves pure and not having sexual relations with women. They are virgins. They follow the Lamb wherever he goes. They have been redeemed from the rest of mankind and are the first ones to be offered to God and to the Lamb. They have never been known to tell lies.
Does some of that ring a bell with some other chapters? That 144,000 and so on. Chapter 7. So who are they, first of all? What nationality are the Jewish people? 12,000 from each of the 12 tribes. Remember, there's a regrouping of the 12. Ephraim's left out, Joseph is back in, Dan's out, and Levi's back in. We have this redeemed Jews. And what other group is there? The 24 elders? Where are they from? Where are they right now? Right. And where is the location this takes place? Where is Mount Zion?
Jerusalem.
In Jerusalem, right. And what's on Mount Zion? Two main mounts in Jerusalem area. The Mount of what? Where he is returning to. The Mount of Olives, right? There are olive groves up there. And then the mount that the temple is on is Mount Moriah in the Old Testament, because that's where Abraham brought Isaac for the sacrifice, right? That was Mount Moriah. That's the same mountain where Boaz had the threshing floor way back in history. But that became the mount for the Temple Mount. We call it the Temple Mount today, or Mount Moriah, or Mount Zion. So it's going to be in Jerusalem. What's going on here? It's the Day of the Lord, the Battle of Armageddon, and who's there?
Lamb, wouldn't that be Jesus?
Right. So we have Jesus, the church that was in heaven, right? 24 elders. In other words, we have heaven coming to earth. That's these groups. But we also have the 144 and the other people who have the mark of God, right? The seal, which means that they are saved people, other saved people of God. And they're here. Those two groups it's talking about. This is where all history is starting to end. When it ends, then we move into the millennium. So it's right at that time period. It's not talking about the Battle of Armageddon at this point. It's just talking about these two groups. It's a positive thing. It's another encouragement. We have the head sounding from heaven. Who's that? Who's the head of the Lamb? Sounded like a waterfall or thunder. Been by a waterfall, that sound there. It's a figurative for what? What is this voice going to sound like? Kind of weak and... No, powerful. Yeah, exactly. That's imagery. Okay, then what? Many harps playing together. Have you ever heard people talk about a pre-death thing and they hear this music and stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well...
But wouldn't that be more than that?
That's the group of evangelistic Jews. It's showing that they come back. It's referring to that group, but it's also saying all those who that they had gotten saved that are still alive. There's going to be people surviving the tribulation. And they'll have a great story to tell, I'll tell you that. And then there'll be the rest of us in heaven coming down with the Lord. And then under 3, it says, well, they're doing all this before the throne of God, the four living creatures, the 24 elders. Not only the 144,000 could learn this song, that's what it says. So it's kind of a Jewish song then. Well, they performed what they were set out to do with great adversity. If we think evangelizing is difficult today at what Satan's trying to stop, you can imagine what it's like there when he's in power of the world. He doesn't gain power over the whole world, not the kings of the East. See that in the Battle of Armageddon. how about verses 6 through 11?
Then I saw another angel flying in midair, and he had the eternal gospel to proclaim to those who live on the earth, to every nation, tribe, language, and people. He said in a loud voice, "Fear God and give him glory, because the hour of his judgment has come. Worship him who made the heavens, the earth, the sea, and the springs of water." A second angel followed and said, "Fallen, fallen is Babylon the Great, which made all the nations drink the maddening wine of her adulteries." A third angel followed them and said in a loud voice, "If anyone worships the beast in his image and receives his mark on the forehead or on the hand, he too will drink of the wine of God's fury, which has been poured full strength into the cup of his wrath. He will be tormented with burning sulfur in the presence of the holy angels and of the Lamb, and the smoke of their torment rises forever and ever. There is no rest day or night for those who worship the beast in his image, or for anyone who receives the mark."
So the proclamation then of the first angel is speaking the gospel. What does it say in Matthew 24 about that? In verse 14, it says, "The gospel will be preached to the whole world, tribe, tongue, nation, everything." It doesn't mean that everybody in those nations will respond to it, but it will be. And we're in the process of doing it now, but look, it's going to happen right then. So that's the good news of God. That's in heaven. Now in the skies, the angel's coming closer. Then what do we have? And he speaks the warning. What does it mean, Babylon is fallen? Now, Babylon here is symbolic. There was a literal city and empire of Babylon. But in the Bible now, at this point, it's a poetic name for what? For evil. There's a source of a lot of the witchcraft and all that stuff came out of Babylon and just moved around the world through these empires. So he's really speaking about whose empire here? Yeah, that eighth one of the Antichrist and Satan's empire, yeah, is fallen. The great city is fallen. Now, it's not referring to Babylon. What is the great city? Is it Jerusalem? Is it Babylon? It's a city where the Antichrist has his headquarters. It's in the Rome area. And it's from there that he seduced the world. Angel 3, speaking directly to those on the opposition, right? Worshipping the beast, and it's a warning. What does he tell them? They've received this mark, and as a result, these people are going to what?
Receive the wrath of God.
Yeah. By choosing that mark, they've already sealed their fate. Let's take our next section of verses, which is 12 and 13.
"Let this encourage God's people to endure patiently every trial and persecution, for they are his saints who remain firm to the end in obedience to his commands and trust in Jesus. And I heard a voice in heaven above me saying, write this down. At last the time has come for his martyrs to enter into their full reward. Yes, says the Spirit, they are blessed indeed, for now they shall rest from all their toils and trials. For their good deeds follow them to heaven."
This is definitely written to a specific group of people during that time. And I think that's pretty self-explanatory, isn't it? Who are the martyrs he's referring to? There have always been martyrs, but what particular group of martyrs is he referring to? That we read about in Revelation.
All the people who have been dying for the cause of Christ.
During what period?
During the period before Christ.
No, it'd be actually during the tribulation would be the main, what he's saying here. But it could be applied to all martyrs, sure. But remember, people, the church in heaven is saying, why, Lord, don't you end this right now? More of your people are being martyred. And he said, because the fullness of time has not taken place yet. Be patient. We're going to be victorious here. See, that's all these encouragements. But I think he's predominantly speaking here to the martyrs during the tribulation time.
I took 12 as being a footnote from John who was writing this, because it's not in quotes, just like verse 13 is not in quotes. Then I heard a voice from heaven. I thought he was kind of telling us today who are reading what he wrote.
Right, well, that's where I was going to go next. But I think that's where it starts. Now, it should go to our own Christian life. When you're in a lot of trials and testing, and you could be martyred, killed for your faith, and that's true. There are times that you really get discouraged, right? This would be a great section for encouragement. It can be applied to the Christian life. How about 14 through 20?
Then the scene changed and they saw a white cloud and someone sitting on it who looked like Jesus, who was called the Son of Man, with a crown of solid gold upon his head and a sharp sickle in his hand. Then an angel came from the temple and called out to him, "Begin to use the sickle, for the time has come for you to reap the harvest is ripe on the earth." So one sitting on the cloud swung his sickle over the earth, and the harvest was gathered in. After that, another angel came from the temple in heaven, and he also had a sharp sickle. Just then the angel who has power to destroy the world with fire shouted to the angel with the sickle, "Use your sickle now to cut off the cluster of grapes from the vines of the earth, for they are fully ripe for judgment." So the angel swung his sickle on the earth and loaded the grapes into the great winepress of God's wrath. And the grapes were trodden in the winepress outside the city, and blood flowed out in a stream 200 miles long and as high as a horse's bridle.
So what is all this about? Let's go to the symbolism first. Is the sickle a symbol or is it a literal sickle?
That'd be a symbol.
Okay. God uses agriculture, doesn't he, a lot through the scripture? Jesus did a lot of parables about the sower, the seed, and all these things. Okay, these all fit together. He's going to do a harvest. So something had to take place to harvest. Something has to be ripe. You don't harvest things until they're ripe. So what is the analogy he's using now? What is ripe? Let's go to the grapevine. Is that what he's using? And he's talking about all these clusters of grapes. Remember when we were studying the difference between Satan and Christ? That one, he is considered as the vine of the earth, where Jesus is the true vine. Vine really means like the root or the main part of it. Hopefully you're in this one over here, but its roots and everything are up in heaven. It's not the vine of the earth, it's the vine of heaven. It's the true vine. So we're saying that if he is the vine and we're the branches, and then what is he trying to do through our Christian life? He's producing what? Fruit. So we'll say grapes. See, with God, if you stay in the vine, if you're saved, and you trust in him, that's to me staying in the vine, doesn't mean you lose your salvation, but you're trusting him, he's going to produce through you, coming from the roots, through the vine, through the branches, and produce fruit. Christian life is fruit-bearing. Now, sometimes you have to prune these branches, and it gets kind of painful. If you don't prune your fruit trees, you don't get good fruit. He wants better fruit. That's our work. So, there's a harvest in a sense of this, but is he talking about that harvest, or is he talking about the vine of the earth? Which one's he talking about? Is he going to take these and put them in a wine press? No. What's he going to do here? The beautiful verse in John. I'm going to come, I've prepared a place for you, and I'm going to take you to your mobile home. No, and even more in that verse. I'm going to take you unto myself. Unto myself. How much more personal can you get? So we're talking about the unsaved here now. So that's the analogy. Now, the sickle is to cut off. They can't blame Satan and the Antichrist and the false prophet and everything. You have to be before God. You can't go and blame everybody else. So that's what they're being brought to judgment here. Now, fire is a symbol of judgment, but here it's the wine press. And symbolically, it's what? Well, they crush the grapes to get the wine. So what kind of wine are they going to have? It's not any good wine, is it? Right? So this being poured out. Now, what is this symbolic of? The wine is equal to what? Well, we use wine in communion as symbolic of the blood of Christ. But over here is symbolic of the blood of what? Or who? No, Satan's not being crushed.
The unbelievers.
Now, is there a time that this is literally going to happen? It said outside the city. What city are we talking about? The city is always Jerusalem. Jesus was crucified where? outside the city. His blood was spilled outside the city. See, there's always a parallel to things. What's the valley? Jerusalem, the Mediterranean, and what's this valley? It's called several things in the Bible. Jezreel, the valley decision, and we know it as the Armageddon. How many people are going to be in here? Well, there's an army of 200 million that came from the east, plus there's all the Antichrist army. So there's going to be mega millions there. And that's when the Lord returns. And of course, that's what it's saying there about the sickle. It talks in other verses about the sword. In other words, his mouth, his word, drop dead. That's all you have to say, isn't it? It's over with. There's a terrible battle going on, and it says that this blood is going to extend how far? As high as a horse's bridle, which is up pretty high,
200 miles
and 200 miles. This whole valley is going to be filled with blood. Blood does seep in, so I don't know if it's actually going to be literally a big lake of blood, or if you take all the blood in a person and multiply it by all these people, if it would equal that. I don't know. But anyway, it's going to be terrible devastation. These people are going to be done away with. But that there fits these other verses you read about in Ezekiel and other places. So you read prophecies all over, and they all combine at a certain point in history. But that's what this is talking about, isn't it? Harvest. Certain things are going to happen, and then they're going to be cut down and thrown into the fire. It talks about the wheat and the tare. You know, the wheat being true of God and the tare being false, but they look similar. And there are examples all the scripture that relate to the same principle, but I believe this is going to be an historical event. That's the difference here.